defending liberty 1 hour at a time, and broadcasting from the RWB Network Studios in New York, you're listening to The Rhino Report. Always right.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
She got chunked. You are very rude.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
And now, here's your host, The Rhino.
Hello, hello, hello. I am The Rhino, and this is my report. Today, March 2nd, 2016. Unless, of course, you're listening on Red State Talk Radio Studio B, which I hope you always are. In that case, it's about 1 a.m. Eastern on March the 3rd. So Super Tuesday is over. The votes have been tallied. The winners have been foretold in some cases. Delegates have been allotted. There are some numbers we need to go over, though. Very, very important numbers that nobody's talking about. You know what? And the picture isn't any clearer. It's no clearer today than it was before yesterday. However, Washington, D.C. today is about 25 degrees warmer than it was yesterday, and that's due to all the hot steam coming out of the ears of the establishment Republicans. We're going to talk about that, too, and what lengths they will go to prevent a Donald Trump presidency. We've talked about it a little bit. We're going to talk about it a lot more. But first, I want to dedicate this Pledge of Allegiance to a great friend of the Patriot Movement, someone we lost over the weekend, a friend of mine, Primo Mondone.
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, the Pledge of Allegiance always brought to you here on the Rhino Report. This one with a little special meaning for me and for everybody in the Red State Talk Radio family. We lost our station manager and the co-host of Red State Town Hall over the weekend. He was a great man. I'm new to the family. I've only been a host, most of you know, for about 2 months, 2.5 months now. But he accepted me into the Red State Talk Radio family with open arms. I had to beg, I had to tweet, I had to email again and tweet again to get Primo's attention about this show and about what I wanted to do and the impact I wanted to make. And he listened to a few episodes and he gave me a call and he said, "We'd love to have you on Red State Talk Radio." We spoke many times. You know, the way it works in internet radio is you don't always see the people you work with. We have our own studios. Most of us work out of our own studios. And so you communicate with people over Twitter, whatever, the phone, via email. And I never had the pleasure of actually meeting face-to-face with Primo. But his dedication came through. And if you listen to Red State Town Hall, the show that he co-hosted, you could tell there's a real love. There's a real love for the country, an impassioned love for his state, Tennessee, and a real love for the conservative movement. And he didn't care what side of the conservative movement you were on. He didn't care if you were all the way to the right or maybe a little bit more to the center. Just as long as you embodied the values of a true patriot, of a true conservative, and you loved to spread the message. He didn't want you to do this because you felt you had to do it. He wanted you to do it because you wanted to help, because you wanted to spread a message. And that was really unique, because a lot of station managers, they tell you what to do. They tell you what you can say, what you can't say, who you can and can't talk about. And Primo never put limitations like that on us. And he was always there, whether it be late at night emails, questions that I had, because being new to the internet radio sphere, I had a lot of questions. And there's sometimes we would talk back and forth. It would be 2 o'clock in the morning, and we'd be emailing back and forth, always willing to lend a hand in terms of programming or sound clarity or even to just give you some suggestions from things he had learned over the many years of doing his own radio show. So for that reason, I wanted to dedicate the Pledge of Allegiance to Primo. Me and Primo had a unique connection in the internet radio sphere here, and we would joke about it. We're both from Italian descent, and except if you ever heard his show, he had a very thick Southern accent, and I, well, do not. So we used to joke that we were on two sides. You know, he was a Southern fried Italian, and I was the Northern Italian. So I will always remember Primo. He gave me a shot here, and for that I am forever grateful. So rest in peace, Primo Mondone. I just want to take a real quick moment of silence for Primo. All right, we're back. Let's move on a little bit. Let's talk about Super Tuesday. Super Tuesday went just about how everybody expected, except maybe for a couple of little things here and there. I don't think anybody really had a clear gauge on Minnesota. So Mini Rubio wins Minnesota. There were a lot of stale polls coming out of Minnesota. I think the most recent poll we saw was from somewhere around the end of January, which really had it kind of as a four-dog race there. Alaska, we saw really nothing out of in the way of polls. So that was up for grabs. I had a feeling Ted Cruz was going to take Alaska. I did have that feeling early on. And Minnesota, you know, because of the demographic of Minnesota, I wasn't terribly surprised. I was a little surprised that Rubio won a caucus state. Ted Cruz has been very good at the caucus states. Maybe he just didn't deploy the ground troops he needed in Minnesota. But remember, Minnesota has the world's second largest Somali population in the world. The world's second largest population of Somalis. Second only, of course, to Somalia. And I find it a little strange that a state with that sort of breakup or that sort of population would vote for a guy who doesn't want to deport anybody. That should be a little telling. That you have people that they flock there. I don't know what the reason is. And if you're from Minnesota, please give me a call and tell me. We'll be doing a live show tomorrow at 12 noon on blogtalkradio.com/TheRhinoReport. Give me a call and tell me why that is. Why is it that these Somalis flood into Minnesota? It seems a little strange to me. That's all. But Rubio wins there, and there was a possibility that Rubio was going to win Virginia, too. If you were watching Fox News, they were sitting there with bated breath. I mean, they were hoping and praying that Rubio won Virginia, because the last thing Fox News wanted to talk about, Megyn Kelly in particular, was going to be a big night for Donald Trump. She did not want to talk about that. You know, it's very tongue-in-cheek when she announces Donald Trump as a winner, which is a little funny because really she owes her career at this point, this year anyway, the surge in her career to Donald Trump. Their little dust-up is what gave her a $10 million book deal. Had she just been doing this show, you know, and there was no Donald Trump involved for the last 6 or 7 months, would she have gotten a book deal? Yeah, sure, absolutely. Would it have been $10 million? Not a chance. But they were hoping and praying that Virginia was going to go Rubio. And they kept pointing to the areas around D.C., your Fairfax County and your Prince George and Prince William and, I don't know, Prince Ali. I have no idea what counties are in that area. But they were pointing to these very suburban counties, saying this is where Rubio has to do well. Well, isn't that interesting that that's where they're looking for Rubio to do well? Because isn't that where we look for Democrats to do well? In the cities and close by suburban surroundings of those cities? Isn't that those are the same places we say, well, oh, the Democrats are going to have to do there because we know the upstate or the west part or the southern part or whatever you want to call the more rural part of your state always goes red. So they always look to these city areas, the more populated areas. I thought it was funny that that's where Rubio had to do well. Maybe that's showing you he's not quite as conservative as they want you to think he is. Or as he wants you to think he is. You know, he's running all these ads about he's the true conservative. Really, let's be honest. If we can be honest with each other for a minute, the real conservative in this race is Ted Cruz. He is the real dyed-in-the-wool conservative. Does Donald Trump have conservative ideas? Sure. He calls himself a common-sense conservative. Okay, whatever. And does Marco Rubio have some conservative ideas? Yeah, he does. But his ideas are really more establishment Republican. And those ideas are what go over better in these same areas that go heavy blue. So if you need a reason to maybe not vote for Rubio, because you think he's young, he's good looking, he's charismatic, so he has all these qualities that presidents generally have, well, except for the young part. Even though he's short and has big ears, whatever. If you're looking for a reason to go to Cruz or to go to Trump and not feel guilty about it, maybe it's because Rubio panders to the same people the Democrats pander to. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's the reason. I didn't like it. I don't know. You don't really see Donald Trump do all that well in the suburban areas, which is a little odd. Because he does really well in the rural areas. And it's strange that a billionaire can resonate with that kind of voter. When Chris Christie calls it a movement, he's right. That's what it is. Donald Trump has a movement going on. And the establishment is not very happy about it. They wouldn't be any more thrilled if Ted Cruz was the candidate either. He may be a little bit more pliable when it comes to the money. We don't know. I don't know. But they do not want Donald Trump, and they will go to any length to stop it. We're going to get into more of that in the second half of the show. But Super Tuesday, we have, let's see, Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Vermont, and the Commonwealth of Virginia go to Trump. Cruz racks up Texas, Oklahoma, and Alaska. Rubio gets Minnesota, and on the Democrat side, really, I think Sanders had a better night than everyone thought he was going to. He won Vermont, he did a speech, and he went home. I guess he had to go to bed. Maybe it was past his bedtime, maybe he had to get up to make dinner, maybe there's an early bird special he was late to, I don't know. But Clinton wins Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Arkansas, Massachusetts, Tennessee, and Virginia. Sanders wins the Green Mountain State of Vermont, Minnesota, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Now, Colorado is interesting because Colorado, they had a bunch of straw polls for the GOP side, and it looked like a lot of them went to Ted Cruz. So that may be a teller as to what may happen in Colorado on the Republican side. Now, I have not had any confirmation of this, but I have had several people who live in Colorado who are part of the process over there tell me that Ted Cruz won just about every straw poll in Colorado. But of course, these don't really mean anything. What else do we have? So the delegate count, if you're counting delegates, if you're counting at home, we'll go over the delegate count here. You have Donald Trump with 316. Ted Cruz with 226, Marco Rubio with 106, Kasich with 25, Carson with 8, and of the bunch that have suspended their campaigns, Rand Paul had 1, Huckabee 1, Fiorina 1, Jeb Bush had 4. On the Democrat side, Hillary Clinton has 1,001 delegates, okay? 2,383 needed to seal the nomination. Bernie Sanders with 371. What's And people are saying this is Hillary running away, when really Sanders didn't have a bad night. He really didn't. He had a much better night than I would have ever thought he would have had. But here's where the Democrats go astray, and they completely subvert their voters, their electorate. Regular delegates, Clinton has 544, and Sanders has 349. That's pretty close. You're talking about as close as Cruz is to Trump. That's pretty close. But you factor in the superdelegates, and Clinton amasses 457 more superdelegates to Sanders 22. So, really, on the surface, they're only 200 apart, less than 200 apart. But the superdelegates, the elected officials, who can vote however they want, are going to run this. And if you're Republican or you're conservative, don't start laughing just yet. Because the same may happen on the Republican side. The same may happen. Again, we're going to talk about more about that more in the second half, because it's a much longer piece, and I don't want to go long with this. But listen, Trump did very well. He had a good night. 7 states out of 11. No one will ever complain about that. No one will ever complain. Here's the issue that nobody is talking about. Democrat turnout was down 32% on Super Tuesday compared to 2008. All right? Meanwhile, the Republican turnout was up 61% over 2008 and 73% over 2012. So if the Republicans have any ideas of trying to take Rubio out and replace him with Romney, it's never going to work. It's never going to work because Romney was the candidate in 2012, and this is up 73% from him, so he couldn't turn the vote out. He couldn't turn it out. Now, let's see. In the first 4 primaries and caucuses, Democrat turnout was down 26% compared to 2008. They're not. It's not looking good. They are not getting the vote out. Democrats are not excited to go vote. And why would you be? Maybe Bernie Sanders can excite you. Maybe the people out there who want free health care and free college and I don't know, free lollipops and free everything, Bernie Sanders may excite them. They might. Because little things excite little-minded people. But there's nothing else out there. You have Hillary Clinton, who is the epitome of establishment, who we can see the whole electorate, not just Democrats, but the whole electorate, are getting sick and tired of. I can talk, I promise. And you have this looming investigation that you know the FBI is going to come back. And there are people who are saying that there's 20 or 30 people in the FBI who are ready to resign and tell the full story should the FBI recommend an indictment to the Justice Department. Now, we heard Loretta Lynch, I think she was with Brett Baier or somebody last week or earlier this week on Fox, talking about how it will be an independent investigation. If you buy that this will be an independent decision by the DOJ, then I have a bridge to sell you. Because nothing anyone does in this administration is independent. It either comes from Obama or it comes from Valerie Jarrett. That's who it comes from. They're told what to do. They're pawns in the Valerie Jarrett-Obama game. Loretta Lynch, too. She's a pawn in their game. As much as she wants to portray this facade of being strong and independent, garbage. She's not. But anyway, in Texas, all right, there were over 1.4 million voters this go-around compared to 2.87 million in 2008 on the Democrat side. So they had half, a 51% slide on the Democrat side for voters in Texas, even though Clinton did win Texas. But in Virginia, a really key state in a general election, it's not good. 780,000 showed up. A 21% decline over 2008. People on the Democrat side can't get excited about Hillary, and how could you? How could you? Unless you have your head buried in the sand and you're just this dyed-in-the-wool Clintonite, you can't get excited about this woman. You just can't. This is where it's going to hurt them in Virginia. Because Virginia, if Virginia goes red, this election, it's over. It's over. 107% increase in turnout on the Republican side over 2008. That's pretty good. I mean, McCain didn't get anyone excited, right? But 2012, there was a 282% increase in voter turnout this year over 2012. Another sign that they cannot put up Romney. He doesn't excite anybody. McCain, after 8 years of George W. Bush, excited people more than Mitt Romney did after 4 years of Barack Obama. Let that sink in for a second. 282% increase. That's pretty wild. That is one of the biggest telling numbers that nobody is talking about. Fox News won't talk about that because they know the voter turnout is due to Donald Trump. That's what it's due to. Would you have a higher turnout if it was just, let's say, Cruz, Rubio, and Jeb Bush were the top three and Trump was just doing his own thing in the private sector? Yeah, you'd have a larger turnout than probably 2008. I don't know about 2012, maybe. But Donald Trump is bringing that excess, that extra. And especially in the open primary states, where he's garnering a lot of Democrats voting for him. Now, some people may say, oh, that means he's not conservative. No, maybe that just means people are coming over. People are seeing the light. People are tired of paying too much in taxes, giving away too much, divvying up wealth. That doesn't make Donald Trump a Democrat. Maybe these people are finally learning. I said it on the last show. I'll take a convert any day. And I don't care if you convert from being a hardcore liberal to even a moderate Republican. That's fine. It means we're educating the country. It means we're moving the agenda forward. So, Donald Trump, obviously, one of the big reasons why voter turnout was so high this whole time. And extremely high last night, and Democrats just, they're struggling to get the vote out. They're struggling. And if this was Hillary Clinton and Martin O'Malley, these numbers would be so much less. They'd be so much less. The only reason they're not in the triple-digit declines is because Bernie Sanders is involved. That's the only reason. That's the only reason. All right. What else do we have here? We have lots of stuff to get to. I'm a little flustered today, if you guys can't tell. I'm a little flustered. All right. Ted Cruz had a nice speech. He was at the Redneck Country Club. That's kind of cool. I thought that was a cool place to be in Texas. He says this. He goes, after tonight, we've seen this is the only campaign that can beat and has beaten and will beat Donald Trump. For those of you who have supported other candidates, we welcome you. United, it's the only way, which is a little odd because you had Ted Cruz calling for people to unite. I mean, just really minutes after Donald Trump held his press conference. Now, Cruz and Rubio held rallies. All right. Donald Trump held a press conference. This is an optics thing, folks. This was Donald Trump showing you he's presidential. That's why he did it this way. He didn't need masses of screaming people. He's had that already, and he'll continue to have that further on. But this was, in a way, treated by Donald Trump as his general election. The general election for the Republican nominee, if you want to put it in those kinds of terms. And he stood there at a podium with Chris Christie, his consigliere, behind him. And that's what Chris Christie is. Chris Christie is very much a senior advisor at this point to Donald Trump. This was less about the endorsement as much as it was about the advisement that Chris Christie could give Trump, how to be more professional, how to combat questions better, how to take on Marco Rubio. That's why Chris Christie is there. The endorsement's nice, but they really mean nothing, right? Like, you have something like six newspapers in New Jersey calling for Chris Christie to resign. That won't get any traction because newspaper endorsements mean nothing. What they say means nothing. Look at the New York Daily News. They can't sell that paper for $1. The whole operation, not one paper, they can't sell the whole operation for $1. No investor will buy it for a dollar. And then you had the paper in New Hampshire, the name escapes me. They rescinded their endorsement of Chris Christie because he backs Trump now. But it means nothing. Oh, the union leader, that's what it is. The union leader rescinded their endorsement. Disavowed. That's the word of the day, right? That's the word of, like, the week, disavow. They disavow Chris Christie. They don't want nothing to do with him. But Chris Christie is as integral to this campaign for Donald Trump as anybody else. If you've ever seen Chris Christie in action, and I don't just mean in a debate format or in town hall format. If you see him at the governor's mansion or at the Capitol in Trenton in New Jersey, when he addresses the media or addresses the local politicians, this man means business. And there are no stumping questions. There are no gotcha questions with Chris Christie because he turns it around. He turns it around, and now he does what like a salesman does. We're trying to buy a car, right? You have all these questions about a car. Eh, I'm not sure if I like it. The salesman disarms you and then comes back at you with more features and benefits. It's a very popular sales tactic. Disarm him, control the conversation, and turn it back around. That's what Chris Christie does very well, and that's because he's a litigator, because he's a very accomplished lawyer, U.S. Attorney General. U.S. Attorney. I'm sorry. I said Attorney General. Was that a slip of the tongue? Maybe a little foreshadowing there. But as Donald Trump was speaking at this press conference, I wasn't looking at Donald Trump. I've heard what Donald Trump has had to say. I know what he's going to say. I was looking at Chris Christie. Now, you have a lot of the mainstream media saying, oh, Chris Christie looked like he was being held hostage back there. You know? Like, they have nothing nice to say. They have nothing nice to say to these people. That includes Fox News. But I was looking at Chris Christie, and you could see when Donald Trump was answering a question and he was staying on an even keel, Chris Christie was nodding his head, not while he was looking at the reporter, but while he was looking at Trump. He was approving of Trump's answers and Trump's demeanor. That was the body language Chris Christie was sending. And I even put that on Twitter last night. I was watching Christie because I wanted to see how many times do you see somebody who gave an endorsement stand behind the guy? You just don't see it. You know, maybe when they first do it, right? Like when Palin first came out and said she was going to endorse Trump, she stood behind him and they had that big rally in Iowa, or Jeff Sessions in Alabama. But you don't see them again. They disappear. They do a little campaigning on the side for that person for a little while. But Chris Christie's hanging around. He's hanging around. And it's purely to get in Rubio's head. And it's purely to start grooming Donald Trump. To start grooming him a little bit. And giving him the answers he needs. And showing him the decorum he has to act with. Trump is starting to look for people to show him how to be president. And that's a big step for the Trump campaign. A huge step. So there were 595 delegates available last night. Trump amassed 285 of them, Cruz 161, Rubio 87. Rubio is saying he's still in this thing. You know, he's going to make this all about a delegate count now. Doesn't matter if we win, it's all about delegate counts. We're gonna come in second everywhere. Well, that may work. And it may work for a reason that he's not all that entirely familiar with. But it may work. It may work. All right, we're going to go to a break here. But Before we go, head over to Twitter and give me a follow there if you want, at Rhino On Air. That's at Rhino, R-Y-N-O, On Air. Or shoot me an email, rhinoonair@gmail.com. I'll always answer, or if you want me to bring the email up on air, I'll do that too. If you don't want me to, well, I may just do it anyway. So if you work in the law enforcement community, or if you have a family member that works as a law enforcement officer, and you think they go above and beyond, I mean, they go above and beyond the call of duty to be a good police officer or corrections officer, probation officer, parole officer. Shoot me an email. Tell me about them. I want to hear their story, and I want to put their story on air. All right? So that's that. We're going to get to a bunch coming up here in the next little bit. We're going to talk about why the Republicans will stop at no end to stop a Donald Trump presidency. That will happen, or at least they think it will happen. Now, Mike Huckabee is saying this whole thing is a revolution with Donald Trump. Is he right or is he wrong? We'll talk about that. And, well, maybe we'll talk a little bit about some more Syrian refugees that are heading to our shores while we're all worried about primaries. All right? So we'll see you back in about 80 seconds.
You are listening to the Rhino Report.
She got chunked.
Always right. Now streaming on Red State Talk Radio.
You are very rude.
Hey guys, your friend and your host, The Rhino, here. There are three ways you can get involved with The Rhino Report and the RWB Network. Here they are. Listen up. Number one, you can be a writer for one of the fastest-growing grassroots conservative media outlets out there. Send me a submission, and I'll read it, and we'll get you published on the RWB Network website. We see hundreds and hundreds of unique hits every single day. Number two, if you want to hear The Rhino Report in your local area, all you have to do is go to your local radio station's website and find the program director's email address. They're always pretty prominent there. Send them an email, say you want to hear The Rhino Report on your local AM or FM station, and I guarantee you, if just one person emails the program director, they will find me and we'll be on your airwaves. The third way to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report and actually make a little bit of money is if you have a little bit of sales experience or even none at all, shoot me an email. We're looking for people who want to sell some advertising space. The show is growing and so can your bank account. So those are three ways to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report. I'll see you back in about 20 seconds.
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
I'm just a man trying to make his mark on history.
Red State Talk Radio.
This is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
All right, welcome back to The Rhino Report. I am your host, and hopefully your good friend, The Rhino. You know, some of you pay attention to this show closer than I think you do. Because I had a few emails that said, hey, why did you change the music on the last show coming back from the break? And I thought to myself, I changed the music? I didn't change the music. Yeah, I did. I did. I looked back, and I used the wrong bumper music. That's what we call those things, you know, before and after you go to commercial, they're called bumpers. And, you know, it was the same music that we play underneath the intro. I guess I used it for the bumper. I wasn't even paying attention. But I have to give you guys a lot more credit than I do, I guess, because you called me out on it. So I went back to the old music this time. If you want to hear different music, let me know. I'll play some new music if you want. You know, we can only use certain kinds of music you don't have rights to. You know, we don't pay royalties here to anybody. So I don't know if I should say that or not, but we don't pay anybody royalties. But yeah, I can find different music if you guys want. You know, I looked up during the break because the TV's always on, and because I'm an American and that's what I do. But they're saying that Mitt Romney is going to make a speech tomorrow from the University of Utah. This is big news, apparently, although they don't think it's going to be a speech where he enters the race. I don't think it's his time to enter. He will use this opportunity to just trample on Donald Trump. You know, Donald Trump is very good at taking back the narrative. If you remember after the debate, where everybody was claiming Marco Rubio won, well, Donald Trump the very next day announced Chris Christie, which is Rubio kryptonite, was now supporting him. Yesterday, in the midst of all the Super Tuesday stuff, Donald Trump gets up at a podium in a very presidential room. It looked a lot like the East Room at the White House, is what some reporters were saying, at that Mar-a-Lago in Florida. And he made a very good speech. It wasn't one of these, you know, these rah-rah rallies. Very presidential, with American flags behind him and, you know, the whole thing. So this is the establishment, again, just not knowing what to do. Well, we'll wait 2 days, and we'll ask Mitt Romney to make a speech, and he'll make a speech, and he'll just totally denounce everything about Donald Trump. I'm sure he'll bring up the taxes, because that's Romney's big thing, is taxes. We want to see his taxes. Yeah, well, we all want to see his taxes. It's not just you. I want to see him, too. But I understand he can't release them while being under audit. You just can't do that. As a business owner, you can't do that. And Mitt Romney knows that. He's just using it to poke the bear a little bit. But Donald Trump was very quick to say we didn't see Mitt Romney's taxes until less than 2 months before the general election in 2012. I think it was September 21st. He had the date nailed. So that was definitely in Trump's talking points for the debate. I'm sure we'll hear that same line tomorrow night on the Fox News debate. Watching the Fox News channel through Super Tuesday last night, and I was back and forth, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC. I like to see who calls things, you know, if MSNBC was calling things before Fox was, because Fox will delay as long as they can calling it for Trump. But Megyn Kelly said that she has a lot of questions that she didn't get to ask Trump last time around that she can't wait to ask him this time around. Well, here we go again. Here we go again. Megyn Kelly is going to try to spread her wings. Maybe she's going for a $20 million book deal now. Who knows? Who knows? But I think with Chris Christie in Trump's ear, he's not going to get baited in. And now Ted Cruz really has a good platform, right? He's won four states. He can get up there. He can debate the topics. He doesn't go to the ad hominem debate. I'm sure Rubio will go that way. I'm sure he will. That's how his campaign has now taken this really visceral turn. So, you know, Rubio will be very, very much on the attack mode. That's the mode that Rubio will be in. You know, he's kind of like an attacking chihuahua. He barks and you go, eh, I don't know. It's a chihuahua. You're not that scared about it. Not like a Rottie, you know, or a pit bull or something like that. That you go, ooh, holy smokes. That's not how Rubio comes across. If he had stuck more to the topics and debated more and less criticized, I think it would have gone over a little bit better. But his supporters seem to like it, and it shows some life, I guess, is what you've been looking from some of the establishment candidates. Jeb Bush did it. He tried to do it. He didn't do it so hot. Jeb Bush looked very uncomfortable when trying to attack Trump. He looked like he was scared of what Trump was going to say next to counter, whereas Rubio doesn't have that same kind of fear that it looks like Jeb had. So I don't think Romney's going to announce he's getting in tomorrow. I do believe wholeheartedly, though, that if Rubio loses Florida on March 15th, on March 16th, he will be out, and on March 17th, Mitt Romney will be in. He will try to amass as many delegates as possible to try to stop the first ballot election of Donald Trump as the nominee. That's what the game plan is. And if Donald Trump amasses enough delegates to get the first ballot nomination, then the establishment has a very tricky situation to try and work over. Do they coalesce around Trump and then maybe go at him backhandedly a little bit in the Congress and in the Senate after he wins? Or do they go completely in the other direction and put up Romney or someone of that ilk as a third-party candidate, essentially handing the election to Hillary Clinton, assuming Michael Bloomberg doesn't see that as an opening? Because I see that happening too. If the Republicans say, we can't do this, we won't support Donald Trump, he's a jerk, we're going to put up Mitt Romney, a retread, I could see Bloomberg saying, well, Hillary has a lot of faults. Why can't I come in as a fourth party candidate and take this whole thing? And I could see that happening. I could really see that happening. So the Republicans will have to decide whether or not they're ready to close up shop on their party, to pull the tent down and just really disband the party. Because that's what it'll do. That's what it will do. By not adhering to what the electorate wants, and whether you're a Trump guy or a Cruz guy or Rubio, Carson, Kasich, whoever or whomever you support, you have to coalesce around the winner. That's what you have to do. Now, it's not un-American if you don't. But if you really believe that a presidency from any one of those five candidates is light years better than a Hillary Clinton presidency, then you have to. All right? The Republicans' party has been on this ledge for a while. And it all started in 2010 with the Tea Party movement, you know? And actually, Hillary made reference to the Tea Party, which is really weird, in her victory speech last night, saying she was in Boston where the real Tea Party started. I got news for you. That woman doesn't even know the half. She doesn't know half of how that even started, of the story behind the actual Boston Tea Party. I guarantee she doesn't know anything about it. She'll be told, because someone will question her on it, maybe. But she doesn't know, because in order to go through with something like the Boston Tea Party, the colonists had to have this sense of patriotism, of national pride, of exceptionalism. They had to have that, and they had to be fed up with the Intolerable Acts. You had to have a lot of things come together to form this groundswell of national pride, even though the enemy was living in your home, in your neighbor's home, was walking the streets, was shooting people. You still had to have this pride for your country, for the collection of colonies. It's a pride the Democrats will never have, because they don't believe that we're an exceptional nation. They'll say it in their general election type speeches, which is what Hillary Clinton was kind of doing. But they don't really believe that we are an amazing, great collection of United States. They'll tell you that we're great because they want you to, you know, pay more in taxes. We're so good, it's going to cost more to live here. That's the whole narrative. If you really break it down to brass tacks, the lowest common denominator, which, believe me, these candidates, these Democrat candidates are, they are the lowest common denominator. So, if this thing gets broken up four ways, Bloomberg's the winner. That's how it's going to work. It's a numbers game. Because Bloomberg can attract a lot of establishment or very moderate Republicans, and he'll attract those Democrats who feel their party has gone way off the reservation. Your moderate Democrats. Because there is such a thing. I joke around by saying there is no such thing, but there are such things as moderate Democrats. There are. We may not like them, but they exist. And Bloomberg will attract them. And perhaps a four-party race brings out a lot more voters. You know, here, what do we get? 25-30% of the total electorate goes out to vote in a national election. It'll be higher this year, but on average, it's something in that area. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But it's not 50%, 70%. A basic fundamental right our founding fathers fought for, risked their lives for, our military risks their lives every single day to protect. People don't take advantage of it. To me, that's just, it's asinine. If you don't want to go vote, you know, go live in Saudi Arabia. Go live in Jordan. Go live there. But a Mitt Romney candidacy on a third party will tear apart the Republican Party. Maybe it's what we need. Maybe it's what we need. See, the establishment Republicans feel like that will then coalesce the party. See, we had to do it. We had to just give you a little spank. You were a bad kid for a little while. We had to spank you. And now you see the right way, and let's go on with the party. That will never happen. People will never let that happen. They will never let the party do that to them and then go back to them. It will be the end of the party. And the establishments can go on and form the donor party or the lobbyist party, whatever you want to call them. That's because that's what they are. But they think that we're all just going to say, we were wrong, you were right. Sorry, Mr. Bill Kristol, or Britt Hume, or Charles Krauthammer. You guys were right, we're wrong. They're treating us like the Democrats treat you. Listen to us, we know better. You don't know what you're doing. And we can't let that happen. So if it means coalesce around someone like Donald Trump, someone you may not agree with ideologically, that may be the best scenario. It may be the best scenario. Now, I do agree that Ted Cruz is the better conservative. If we're going to pigeonhole politics and say a conservative is this, and a liberal is this, and a libertarian is this, then yes, Ted Cruz is the conservative. There's no argument about it. But why do we put the same constraints on us as the Democrats want to do also, right? The Democrats are famous for forming these victim groups. Oh, you're a woman. Oh, you're a minority. Oh, you're a victim. You're this. You're that. You're something else. Why do we let them do that to us? Why do we let the media define what a conservative is? If you believe the Constitution is living and breathing, why can't a party be the same thing? Why do we always have to be the one thing? Yeah, maybe Donald Trump is not as conservative as Ted Cruz. But at the same time, he's not Hillary Clinton. He's not Hillary Clinton. And I'm not telling you to go vote for Donald Trump. In fact, when I go to primary in April, I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for yet. It was between four, and then it was between three, and now it's between two. I think you guys know who the two are. But I'm between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. That's who I'm between. You know, my gut tells me that Ted Cruz will be an amazing defender of the Constitution. But my gut also tells me that Donald Trump will get things done. And if Ted Cruz is elected, it's kind of business as usual. Yeah, he'll rescind Obamacare. Yeah, he'll rescind the Iran deal. Good things. These are good things. I'm not disparaging them. But he'll go through the motions. He'll do whatever he has to do to appease his donors and to appease certain people. Well, I don't think Donald Trump will. Donald Trump will be much more proactive. He'll just get a bid and build the wall. And yeah, is that a little imperialistic? Sure, it absolutely is. And will he have to learn to go through Congress for a lot of things? Yes. So the learning curve is much steeper on Trump, but I think the upside is higher. The learning curve on Cruz is less steep. But I feel like there's a lot more gridlock involved with Ted Cruz. So that's where I am. I think both would make very good presidents. I wouldn't be mad if either one were the nominee. I wouldn't. I would support either one. What I won't support is the RNC subverting my right to cast a primary vote and nominating somebody that they want. That's what I won't stand for. And that's what I won't support. And I'll speak out about it every day that I have to. Until someone gets the message. Until the RNC tells me to shut up. And when they tell me to shut up, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to talk louder. Because I will not stand for that. And these establishment, quote-unquote, conservatives. You can't be an establishment conservative. If you're going to say a conservative is a patriot, then you can't be an establishment patriot. It's not a thing. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. But the media and the RNC, they want to tell you how it works. That's why you have to keep listening to stations like Red State Talk Radio or the iConservative Radio Network. Right? These stations are the ones that are not going to let mainstream media dictate how you think, how you feel, and especially how you vote. Because we're out here and we're beating the drum. And I'm telling you, it's completely up to you who you want to vote for. I don't care. I really don't. I just don't want you to vote for Hillary. That's what I want. That's what I don't want you to do. Don't vote for that one. She's crazy. I mean, she said in this speech last night, let me see if I can find it. I've kind of gone way off my notes here. She said that America needs more love and kindness. All right? That's their way of saying, I'll take your money and distribute it for you. That's what they're saying. You know, typical Democrat philosophy. I'm enlightened, you're not, follow me blindly. Follow me blindly. That's their philosophy. Tell the people that you're the one. You're the enlightened one, you know best. They're just simpletons. That's what Obama did, same thing. What's hope and change? No one knows, just follow him, he'll do it. That's what they did. That was the whole playbook. You know, she says, this country belongs to all of us, not just those at the top, which is funny coming from the woman who panders to Wall Street, right? You can't believe a word that comes out of this lady's mouth. You can't. I don't know. People when you watch these rallies with Hillary Clinton, it's a lot of the same thing you're seeing. And I'm not going to describe the audience for you. You guys know what it looks like. But it's a lot of the same thing. At least with Bernie Sanders, you see a different kind of audience. You see a more engaged audience. I mean, I think if you had a Trump versus Bernie Sanders ticket, or election, rather, first of all, it would be entertaining as hell. There'd be nothing more entertaining than watching that. And secondly, that may be what our country needs to take back our votes from the DNC and from the RNC. It engages more people. Bernie Sanders raised $47 million on the average donation of less than $30 per person in February. That's an engaged electorate. Those are engaged supporters. Now, we don't know numbers like that from Trump because he's funding his own campaign. Despite what anybody says, he's taking out loans, this and that. I don't believe that. He doesn't need loans. But Ted Cruz has a very similar campaign, too, to Bernie Sanders, in a way. You know, Ted Cruz went from town hall to town hall to town hall, speaking to 10 people, 20 people, 30 people at a time. And that's how he won Iowa. He engaged the electorate. So we don't need a Romney versus Clinton ticket. That doesn't do anything, or election. But a Sanders-Trump would. Even a Trump-Hillary would. Something to engage us, to bring us back to realize we can take our country back. We don't need career politicians. We don't need people who pander to others, who tell us how this country belongs to all of us, not just those at the top, and then won't release her speeches from speaking to different Wall Street organizations and big companies in New York. It is a smack in the face to the intelligence of the American voter. And that's what Hillary does. All right, one last thing before we wrap this up. For the last 2 or 3 days, we've been hearing all about David Duke endorses Trump. Trump disavows. And then people keep asking him the question 25 different ways until they get an answer that they like. CNN did it. And he said he had a bad earpiece, whatever. And he said, well, I won't disavow a group until I know who they are. But obviously, CNN was referring to David Duke. So the media trying to slander Trump with this Duke stuff, you know, which is a little funny because really, if you were going to paint anybody into a picture of being a racist, you would think it'd be easier for the media to do it to a Ted Cruz. I'm not saying he is. He's definitely not. Ted Cruz is definitely not a racist. But here's a guy from Texas. He has a southern accent. Hey, why not? The media does what they want anyway. Well, Hillary Clinton, it's pretty funny. Hillary Clinton has more ties to the KKK than Trump, Cruz, Rubio, whomever will ever have. Her friend and mentor, Robert Byrd, she actually gave the eulogy at Senator Byrd's funeral. And she said, today our country has lost a true American original, my friend and mentor, Robert C. Byrd, a man of surpassing eloquence and nobility. Well, that's funny, because this guy wrote a letter to Senator Theodore Bilbo of Mississippi, that said, I shall never fight in armed forces with a Negro by my side. Wow. And then he says, he won't fight with them because they're race mongrels, a throwback to the blackest specimen of the wilds. This guy, who was a KKK member, Robert Byrd, he's since passed. He voted against the 1965 Civil Rights Act. This was a good friend of Hillary Clinton. Gave his eulogy, a glowing eulogy at that. But no, Republicans are the racist ones. We're all racist, right? That's how it is. Anyway, you can always find the Rhino Report on iTunes and TuneIn and Spreaker and Podbean and Stitcher. You can find us there, download us, subscribe to us. I'd really appreciate it. But for now, a huge thank you to all of those serving our country at home and abroad. Also, a huge thank you to those in the law enforcement community. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all your hard work. We all depend on you. God bless all of you. God bless all of your families. And until Friday, I'm the Rhino, and I'm out.
You've
You've been listening to the Rhino Report. Always right. Copyright 2016.